KZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The U.S. imposed tariffs on goods from China, Canada, and Mexico today, and now U.S. imports are also facing reciprocal tariffs. In a few hours, President Trump will address a joint session of Congress on his economic agenda and others, things ABC's Karen Travers says it's centered on the renewal of the American dream.
He's going to focus on four big areas in his speech, kind of dividing it up into sections. I think that's where you'll hear him talk about the DOGE effort to reduce the federal workforce, streamline the federal government. He'll focus on that there. He's also going to talk about the economy. He'll talk about border security and what the White House says his efforts to have peace around the world.
The U.S. paused U.S. military aid to Ukraine following that fallout from his meeting with President Zelensky. Now two sources briefed on discussions say the U.S. and Ukraine could sign the mineral rights deal as soon as today. Mardi Gras celebrations in New Orleans underway but could be hampered by severe storms, including the threat of tornadoes. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. State Democrats have introduced legislation to ban the use of algorithms and artificial intelligence to raise rent prices in Wisconsin. The bill was introduced by State Senator Kelda Royce and State Representative Breanne Brown in an effort to slow rapidly rising housing costs in the state. A Department of Justice lawsuit claims landlords have used those programs to unfairly increase rent prices and say it violates antitrust laws. Wisconsin did not join that multi-state lawsuit, but has seen one of the sharpest housing cost increases in the country. Law enforcement authorities across the state will be stepping up their impaired driving enforcement this month. Departments will deploy increased patrols to discourage residents from driving while intoxicated and are warning residents that there will be a zero-tolerance policy for impaired driving and open containers. The increased and highly visible enforcement efforts are meant to encourage residents to plan their ride ahead if they intend to consume alcohol. They're also encouraging other drivers to report any suspected impaired driving. A Duluth nonprofit is raising money to combat rising food insecurity in the region. Chum has launched their Minnesota March Food Share campaign and is hoping to raise $80,000 and accept 40,000 pounds of food donations. Last year, they raised $125,000 and received nearly 55,000 pounds of food. Officials say every dollar and every pound of food will go towards addressing food insecurity in the region. The campaign will run through April 6th, and donation specifics can be found online. The Superior Police Department is reminding residents that they're handing out overdose prevention kits for free. According to authorities, the department has been handing out the kits to anyone who needs them with no questions asked. They contain fentanyl test strips, Narcan, and various resources for harm reduction and treatment referral options. They're also promoting their fund dedicated to helping people struggling with addiction get into treatment programs. The free kits can be obtained by calling the department directly. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
Another Brewers pitcher injured. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Brewers manager Pat Murphy says he now has half a dozen pitchers dealing with injuries in spring training. The latest, Aaron Ashby, the lefty pitching last night against the Reds, had to leave the game with an apparent strained oblique muscle. The Reds went on to win 5-4. Ashby to undergo an MRI.
Even though it's frustrating, but just kind of, you know, what the timing feels like going on the mound.
The team has signed 36-year-old lefty Jose Quintana, who spent the last 2 years with the New York Mets. Basketball tonight. The Bucks are on the road in Atlanta to take on the Hawks. College hoops, number 12th ranked Wisconsin in the Twin Cities, 7:30 tomorrow night for a border battle with Minnesota. Did the Badgers' lack of shots fail them at Michigan State Sunday? Greg Gard.
Yeah, well, we had three possessions there at the end where we kind of had ball screen defense breakdowns is a word I'll use because I'm not going to use the word I use with the team.
That's Wisconsin's Greg Gard with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Rain changing to snow tonight. Winter storm warning for accumulations of 2 to 6 inches and strong wind gusts higher than 40 miles an hour, producing widespread blowing snow. Temps fall out of the 30s into the 20s as snow wraps up tomorrow morning. Right now it's 31.
Matt Nair on air.
A lot of federal employees got this fork in the road letter. You can stay, but you're not really guaranteed anything. Luann's husband is a Vietnam veteran.
I wrote a letter to President Musk. My husband put his life on the line for our country.
Wow.
You are putting my husband's life on the line right now by cutting all those programs that are keeping him alive at the VA. Please call your legislators and tell them to stand up. This is not what America is.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Yo, I'm your old basketball. Haven't seen you out on the courts in a while. Why not pass me over to Goodwill? Donating me helps Goodwill's mission to provide career training and support services right here in the community. And that's a slam dunk. Donate today. Hey, I got next.
To find your nearest Goodwill locations and to learn more about our mission, please visit goodwill.org. Goodwill, where your things start new lives.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We'll break down the presidential address with our friends Pat Kreitlow of Up North News Radio and Trigby Olson of the Lincoln Project and see what's ahead for Ukraine. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Albaugh Show.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
Well, one more time. It's not Dom Salvia, but he will be back tomorrow. Instead, you're stuck with me, his producer, Jess P.S., and my fantastic co-host for the day, Harvey J.K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. In the previous hour, we've been talking truth, the importance of truth, the value of truth, especially in a time of lies. Now, wrapping up this discussion a little bit, we've got a couple calls and a couple texts that I want to get to. And then in this hour, we're going to talk about what the real conflict is. Is it between Democrats and Republicans? I think not. I think it's between oligarchs and the rest of us. Now, Harvey J.K., you have a storied history of studying this conflict between oligarchs and the rest of us. And so I value the expertise that you can bring us and the perspective that you can share on what this conflict has been and how far back it goes, because it's not just the past couple of years. In fact, as we've been discussing, it's been decades on decades. So we're going to get to that. But first, a couple texts and a couple calls in. Jim from Kenosha says, we are happy to be with you, Jess. I'm happy to be with you too, Jim. He follows up with, Trump speaks yesterday. Enemy is not our enemy. In fact, they never were. And further news, Americans hate eggs and always have. Stay tuned for further announcement. Now, see, the funny thing is, I can't tell, Jim, if this is satire or not, because it could very well have been that Trump came out just to say that, you know, Americans hate eggs. That's why they're not buying them. I mean, of course, what else could it possibly have been?
Did he say that?
I don't know. That's the thing. I can't tell anymore. Is it a headline from The Onion? Is it from The New York Times? I really, really can't tell anymore. We've got a texter from the 262 saying, I'm thinking of the movie Liar Liar with Jim Carrey. That is one of my favorite films. And I just trying to imagine Trump being afflicted with that condition of being absolutely incapable of telling a lie for 24 hours would be really, really something. Really something. Cam from Appleton says that he is in the 5051 Discord server, and it's hilarious how many people are so effing mad, and it gives him a little hope. Yeah, people are mad, and they deserve to be so. And is that a picture of Harvey K from back in the day, Cam? It's possible that Cam has unearthed a picture of you from the 70s? Cam,
possibly.
Follow up, please.
Yeah. Do I have a beard and long hair?
No, slightly long hair, clean shaven.
Oh.
Oh.
I'll send it to you.
Okay.
I don't know where he gets these things. He has his ways and his means. Let's get to the lines, shall we? Mark from the SAC, you are up first. How are you doing today, sir?
Oh, doing okay. And did I miss you? But said Trump has issued a directive not to teach kids anything that might make them feel uncomfortable. I mean, that is just makes it. You know, history is uncomfortable. I mean, historical facts out there. I mean, that history of slavery is uncomfortable. The history of the United States. You know, I mean, even in contemporary times, of the anti-Semitism that existed in the United States prior to World War II, where we could have rescued hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people by letting them immigrate to the United States. Then I saw today a little blurb that in 1921, Russia invaded the Ukraine because they tried to break away from when the Russian Empire collapsed. They figured, well, we'll establish Ukraine again. And the Soviets came in and retook Ukraine. It just staggers the imagination. I mean, the books that I've read in the past 10 years, 1491 by Charles Mann, 1493, now I've read that, and another book by Charles Mann talking about, you know, the pre-Columbian and post-Columbian impact of that contact of, you know, of Europeans and people from Asia discovering the New World and what happened as a result of that, how it created our contemporary society. I mean, but we want to talk about, not teach about the Opium Wars. I mean, it's insane. It is
indeed. Thank you for the call, Mark. History is full of instances that make us uncomfortable, and it should make us uncomfortable. Because in the past, even in the present, humans have and always have been a flawed species. Tarvi K, your thoughts?
Happily. You know, I want to reiterate that we live in an age in which it's as if we don't want heroes. We don't want to recognize that there really has been progress, that really struggles in America do matter, have liberated generations. And I can tell you that while all of the other tragedies and ironies are indeed all too true, if we fail to remember the struggles and the progress, we will have lost, because what the likes of the right especially, but also centrists and liberals included, often have done, what they've often done is they have obscured or suppressed the memory of how real progress happens.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't come to appreciate the struggles from the bottom up, that, for example, let me give you a good example.
Mentioned
slavery, okay? So undeniably, Lincoln was pivotal and fundamental, essential to bringing an end to slavery, the signing of the Emancipation mm-hmm. Proclamation.
And
what we often do forget, is that when the Civil War began, as Union troops moved into the South, thousands and thousands of Black slaves, men and women, raced as quickly as they could to the Union lines to offer themselves mm-hmm. as workers or soldiers in the Union cause. And it was their doing so that empowered Lincoln to sign the Emancipation Proclamation.
Which we should remember that the Emancipation Proclamation does not free all slaves.
Right. Right. But let's also not forget that there was smart reason to leave it at the states in rebellion, because the border states like Maryland and Kentucky and mm-hmm. Missouri, had they been told slavery itself was finished, might well have moved into the Confederate camp.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the fundamental moment, you might say, the Emancipation Proclamation, in declaring that slavery will come to an end in this country. And then, of course, the 13th Amendment and associated 14th and 15th Amendments. So we just shouldn't lose touch with the fundamental, progressive, indeed radical story that is America. And let's not forget, those stories are themselves the popular response to the viciousness all too often that has prevailed in our history.
Yes, indeed. human history is one of radical cruelty and radical kindness, radical regression and radical progression. We are a species of duality, and it is important, it is vital that we be able to hold that nuance and study and reckon with the worst things that our ancestors have done, because that allows us to accept the best things that they have done.
There was a writer back, he lived right through into the 70s, a man named Max Lerner. And in the course of his life, he moved from the far left over to the moderate right. But nevertheless, when he was at his best back in the 1930s and the 40s, he did a book entitled It Is Later Than You Think, The Need for Militant Democracy. And there are lines in there that I could not resist, one of which is, the basic story in the American past, the only story ultimately worth the telling, is the story of the struggle between the creative and the frustrating elements in the democratic adventure. I love that. And I go back
to
that.
Can you read that
regularly.
One more time?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's right at the outset of my book, Take Hold of Our History, which is basically making an argument about Americans as radicals. Mm-hmm. The basic story in the American past, the only story ultimately worth the telling, is the story of the struggle between the creative and the frustrating elements in the democratic adventure. From my book, Take Hold of Our History, a quote that I grabbed hold of from the writer Max Lerner.
Excellent, excellent. And we are going to be talking a little bit more of taking hold of that history, because there is a struggle in this country. And I really don't believe in my heart of hearts that it is between Republicans and Democrats. I believe that those are titles that people have assumed onto some of themselves. I believe that this is between oligarchs, a few people who have an incredible, absurd amount of wealth and control and power, and the rest of us. Tom from Jackson texts in, he feels that this conflict is one between good and evil that he has felt since 2016. An evil force has fallen upon this country and clouded good people's minds. I can understand that. I can reckon with that. Later in this hour, we are going to be discussing a bit of the history of some of the progress that we have made as a country, some of the economic progress that we have made to shift control out of the hands of the few, out of the hands of the oligarchs, and into the hands of the many, of we the people, and the backlash against that. Because Harvey K., this is, unless I am quite wrong, one of your greatest areas of study. And this is something that we've brought you on to talk about once a week here on the Dom Salvia Show. So we're going to dig into that a bit later in the hour, as well as continuing to take your calls and your texts at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Human history is difficult and complex and complicated, and we should be able to reckon with it and to take hold of it and participate in it. You can do that. Coming up April 1st, we have a general election here in the state of Wisconsin where your voice and your vote matters. Vote for Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice to be Judge Susan Crawford. And make sure you also vote for Superintendent of Public Instruction, two candidates for that. And if you're interested about learning more about those two candidates, check out Busted Pencils here on Civic Media. We'll be right back here on the Dom Salvia Show.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported last year that the Trump transition team had been funding itself through unknown private donations and refused to sign a General Services Administration transition support memo, which limited private donations to $5,000. The memo was never signed, and the transition's private donors still haven't been disclosed. Nonprofit news site Notice reports that previous transition teams disclosed that information by February 19th, including Trump's first transition. In November, Trump's chief of staff promised to disclose those donors. The Presidential Transition Act of 1963 allows money controlled by the GSA to fund presidential transition expenses, including office space, personnel, IT, and other support services to aid incoming and outgoing administrations. That funding is contingent on the incoming administration signing a memo of understanding and the $5,000 limit on private donations. But while Trump's team agreed on the terms of the new administration's move into the White House, it refused to sign GSA's transition support memo, allowing it to sidestep the limits and disclosure requirements. So between November 7th and January 20th, it's likely millions were received from wealthy donors and corporations, and Americans still don't know who funded its transfer of power and the influence it bought. We've linked the notice report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Trump and Vance verbally assaulted the president of Ukraine, an ally of the U.S. Trump defending the president of Russia, a known dictator. This is a complete capitulation to our sworn enemies. And it's time for Republicans, my former party that I left in 2011, to speak the hell up. Because if we don't, it's not going to be long before we don't have anything left to defend.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Welcome if you're just joining us. I'm not Dom Salvia. Dom Salvia is not in the building, but he will be tomorrow. I am Jess P.S., producer of this program. And joining me today for the entire show is Harvey J.K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, where we've been talking about truth, the complicated nature of human beings and human history, and starting to get into a conversation of what is the real conflict that is unfolding in our country. Before we go any farther, we've gotten a couple texts and a couple calls in, and I just want to give a little eye contact to them. Neil from Glendale, I know this texter. I grew up with him. It doesn't surprise me that Trump is lying about Russia as an aggressor in this war. I expect that garbage from him. I'm appalled that so many, including his spineless cabinet, are buying this. I agree, Dad. I agree. It doesn't surprise me. It does make me a little bit nauseous, but it doesn't necessarily surprise me. Harvey, do the lies about Russia and Ukraine surprise you at all?
Well, it does, but something that did surprise me, and I have no affection for the man I'm going to refer to. Ron Johnson, did you hear the news break during the break?
No, I didn't.
He acknowledged that, yes, Russia invaded Ukraine.
Oh, which, by the way,
and shows he's a little more sane than I realized.
It was a low bar,
it's interesting
though
that he did break with Trump on his telling of the tale.
Indeed. Now let's get to the phone lines. Joe from Madison, you've been very patient waiting for us to get to you. What's on your mind today, Joe?
Harvey, I'd like to hear what you have to say. I guess I'm not asking for an answer to a question, but more for you to riff about tariffs in the past in the context of, okay, you start with a tariff and then what? What happens after that? Warren Buffett has come out. He doesn't very often, and he has described what's happening by saying this. He says tariffs are an act of war. I would like to expand on that a little bit more in terms of what's going on with our tariffs against Canada, of somebody who had been an ally and a terrific trading partner. There is an article within the CBC. People can look it up in cbc.ca. That's their news in Canada. The title is Trudeau Says Trump's Dumb Trade War is Designed to Collapse the Canadian Economy. But it's more than that. Within the article, he says he's trying to collapse the Canadian economy to make it easier to annex us. To annex is to invade. It is to take over. It is an act of war. And I'm interested in, you know, the lies that are being presented to foment this is that, oh, it's the fentanyl that's, you know, pouring over the Canadian border, which we all know is a lie because it's less than 1% of all the fentanyl that's within the United States. So what I would ask you is your thoughts about this, about how things can go out way beyond where you think they're going to go, in looking at another detail that happened in the last week, and that was that Trudeau, who has as his ultimate leader the King of England, King Charles, made a trip over to England and met with the Prime Minister, but also had a private meeting with King Charles. Now, in reading about this, the King does not have powers except what the Parliament gives him, except with one exception, and that is that he is the head of the armed forces and has the power, apparently, to declare war through the royal prerogative. He can declare this on a potential or actual hostile military operations. These are under the royal prerogative. And I find this fascinating at a time when NATO may not be able to be called upon because things are too tumultuous and people too afraid of leaving their troops. So, you know, to counter the Russian thoughts, whatever is happening with Russia. I guess I just would like you to riff on this based on what happened in the 30s with tariffs and then the ultimate nightmare of World War II. What is happening that you would go ahead and anger an ally with these deleterious tariffs? He said that they are going to be quite brutal to the Canadian economy. Can you riff on this a little bit in terms of what in God's name might be going on here in terms of trying to annex Canada? Thank you. I appreciate it, Harvey.
Thank you, Joe, for that call.
I can tell you that it's a little hard to riff because my mind is constantly changing on this question. Not the question of tariffs, the question of what Trump ultimately intends. Mm-hmm. I mean, he said he wants Greenland. He said, let's make Canada the 51st state. I mean, the very way in which he presents that implies that he truly wants to anger, to outrage the Canadians.
It does seem that way.
There is nothing. First of all, I mean, the U.S. and Canada have been as intimate of allies as one can imagine now for decades upon decades. Our northern security. I mean, people should look at the globe, right? But don't look at the globe in the normal way as we think of it as a map. Think of it as looking at it from the down upon the Arctic. Okay. So Russia, Canada, the United States. You come over the top, it's Canada and the United States. Our security is intimately connected to Canadian security. Now, why is he seeking to unsettle that relationship? First, by way of tariff wars or whatever? Well, the tariffs are not going to make American industry suddenly mushroom. It's just not going to happen. In fact, working people are going to be paying more as a consequence of the tariffs. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the tariffs against Canada are clearly further intended to outrage Canadians. Now, if we believe that Trump is truly an ignoramus, then he may well believe that if Canadians are unsettled, they might want to enter the United States.
But what about unsettling a sovereign nation by instilling tariffs on them would make them decline?
If we assume he's an ignoramus.
Well, that's easy to assume.
Okay. Well, yes and no. I mean, somebody obviously got to him. Because he's not very original in his thinking either. It's not out of the question that Musk is literally an agent of destruction. And I say that seriously. That's what I've come to. An agent of destruction.
And we'll pick this conversation back up on the Dom Salvia Show, sans Dom Salvia for the day. I'm Jess P.S., producer of this program, with my guest for the day, Harvey J.K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies. Give us a call, 855-752-4842. More when we get back.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. This is your local Civic Media radio station.
Want to hear even more? Anytime?
Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation is warning residents who use EasyPass about a text scam claiming they have unpaid tolls. Officials say the texts have been popping up in several states and see the scammers using the threat of late fees for unpaid tolls to gather personal information about their potential victims. The fake fees only ask for a few dollars, but if residents do enter their financial information under the link, they could lose much more. EasyPass officials say they do not text to their customers about toll payments. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation Division of Motor Vehicles has announced new fraud prevention efforts. The agency is using a new verification process and alert tool to help residents prevent their identities from being stolen. The new verification feature is available on various DMV applications and compares a photo of the consumer in the moment with the photo the DMV has on file to verify their identity. Residents can sign up for the new alert system online and get notified of activity on their account like a change of address request. The Washburn County Board of Supervisors is now accepting applications for 2025 alcohol and other drug abuse and use prevention mini-grants. The grant program provides community groups with funding for efforts to develop healthy communities. The county has offered the funding since 1987, and this year there is $10,000 available through the Washburn County Community Alliance for Prevention. Applications for the grant funding can be submitted online, and individual organizations can receive up to $1,000. The Barron County Sheriff's Department is warning residents of a slew of scams circulating the area. According to a press release, several scams have cost residents nearly $50,000 over the past few months. Authorities are reminding residents not to give out their personal information, never pay potential scammers in cash, gift cards, or Bitcoin, and not to answer the phone if they don't recognize the number calling. Some common scams include computer virus claims, grandparent scams, extortion attempts, and rental scams. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Some fun moments during Sunday's Oscar broadcast included Queen Latifah looking like she wore a parachute to the event during her nice tribute to Quincy Jones. There was also Adrian Brody, who won his second Best Actor Oscar for his performance in the nearly four-hour-long film The Brutalist, and his acceptance speech was almost as long. There was Timothée Chalamet, who some thought was the odds-on favorite for Best Actor, dressed in a bright yellow pantsuit. Luckily, it's Hollywood, and the people around him were already wearing sunglasses. It's always exciting when history is made at such a big event. Anora writer-director Sean Baker won four Oscars for the film, becoming the first person ever to win four Academy Awards for the same film. The critically acclaimed director took home trophies for Best Original Screenplay, Best Director, and Best Picture. He is also the film's producer, and he won an Oscar for Best Editing. Anora was the talk of the night as lead actress Mikey Madison won Best Actress, giving Anora five Oscars out of six nominations. Not a bad Sunday. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Rain changing to snow tonight. Winter storm warning for accumulations of 2 to 6 inches and strong wind gusts higher than 40 miles an hour, producing widespread blowing snow. Temps fall out of the 30s into the 20s as snow wraps up tomorrow morning.
Right now it's 31.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Folks, I'm talking with Jill Rosenthal. Trump is proposing to make incredibly drastic cuts to the NIH.
The National Institutes of Health, the state receives almost $600 million. That pays for over 7,000 jobs in Wisconsin and accounted for almost $1.5 billion in economic activity in 1 year.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I'm very excited. It is my pleasure to welcome tonight my old pal, Dr. Kristen Lierley. I told the entire listening audience that I rub my feet together sometime when I watch TV, and I called it self-cuddling. And it's like the only thing we do where we rub our own bodies when we relax, you know.
Is it? Are you telling that to a gynecologist? Pete, come on.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pat Kreitlow.
We are joined Wednesday morning by Congressman Mark Pocan for an update on Elon Musk's wrecking ball and what Democrats can do to push back.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Looking back at the years gone by like so many summer fields.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. I'm not Dom. I'm just PS, the producer of this program. Joining me all day today is Harvey J.K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. It's quite the title. Maybe we should shorten it just a touch for you. Nah, I like saying the whole thing. Today we've been discussing truth. Truth in a time of lies and how to reckon with a complicated history, which is all important. In this segment, I'd like to get your thoughts, Harvey, on the class wars that have defined so much of American political history. Tonight, we are expecting to see from the current president an address to a joint session of Congress, not officially a State of the Union, but a speech in the manner of a State of the Union. How this address has typically taken place, and looking at specifically two instances in which it's been used to portray a very positive potential future for the working people. Every American person who works in order to get through the day, as opposed to what we're expecting to see tonight. Before we get into that, though, do want to take a moment and remind everyone, next segment, our last segment of the day, tell us something good. In a time when it can be so easy to get so bogged down in everything that is bad, everything that is harmful and hurtful and full of lies, it is absolutely vital to take time to reflect on that which is good and to preserve that which is good. It is, in fact, a form of resistance to not give power to the forces that want to keep us down. So tell us something good in that last segment. Now, Harvey K., this country is our greatest threat, is our greatest conflict between Democrats and Republicans?
No, although the current crop of Republicans in Congress are decidedly a threat.
Sure.
But let me put it this way. If we put this all in sort of historical perspective, the first thing to understand, and I tell this to people who ask me about, you know, Democrats, Republicans, I said, Republicans today are more extreme than they have been ever.
Sure. In what way?
Well, in the fact that they have literally fully embraced the Trump agenda,
mm-hmm.
and they have reverted to what we would think of as what was once upon a time the Southern Democrats politics.
Sure.
A politics that exudes racism,
mm-hmm.
okay, wants to keep women, you know, as second-class citizens, not, you know, unable to control their own bodies. I mean, it's not unlike going back in time, the kinds of things that they're interested in pursuing. And in many ways, they've become the old Dixiecrats of the past. But here's the thing. I blame the Democrats for where we are today.
In what way?
Well, here's the thing. The Democratic Party was the majority party from 1932 all the way into the 1970s. They lost elections,
mm-hmm.
but it was rare for Republicans to take control of Congress. Very rare. Okay. Now, in the 1970s, and this we almost want to step out of the parties for a minute. In the 1970s, the corporate executive class in this country essentially declared war on the democratic achievements, small d democratic achievements of the mm-hmm. 1930s and the 1960s. Now, business leaders despised the New Deal in the 1930s, and they despised FDR. And there were even conspiracies to take him down, you might, okay, is the best way I can
sure.
put it.
Sure, yeah, to, okay. to take him out.
But working people loved FDR. They loved FDR because he knew that he would fight for them
mm-hmm.
and empower them to fight for themselves in the workplace. Okay, so when he took office, he made it very clear in a speech just before the November election of 1932 that America's big problem was that it had given too much power to what you and I just referred to as the oligarchs, what he called the titans of industry. And by doing that, Americans had allowed, had lost touch with the promise of the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the understanding that that was not set in stone and never to be looked at again. It was, in fact, something to be understood in terms of history. So, for example, what we might ask today, what does it take to be able to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? And he asked that question in the 19-teens, the 1920s, and going into the 1930s. And I would argue that he ran for president in 1932, not only to help lead the nation out of the Depression, but also to bring an end to what was known as the Gilded Age ruling class, the oligarchy that had come out of the late 19th century. And the best proof I have of his intentions are in 1936, when he was nominated to run for president again for a second term, he actually pointed a finger at that oligarchic class, at that class of corporate, the corporate elite. I think I've read this before on this show.
You have, but it bears repeating, please.
He said, these economic royalists, he compared them to the political royalists of the revolution versus the patriots. These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. Our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power. Basically, he was making it very clear. If they were coming after him, they were coming after him because of the threat that he and organized labor represented. And that it was imperative that we understand that it was that they their power should be weakened. He called for higher taxes on the rich. He called actually for capping the incomes of the rich.
Yeah.
And he, at the same, even as he was signing into law the National Labor Relations Act and created the National Labor Relations Board, which empowered the federal government to stand behind workers in their efforts to organize labor unions. Well, in 1941, with World War II already underway in Europe and in East Asia, he gave a State of the Union message, January 6, 1941. And in the State of the Union address, which came to be known as the Four Freedoms Speech,
something you're a little bit familiar with.
He warned Americans that the fascists were not going to tell us when they were going to attack. And he laid out the imperative for the United States to become the arsenal of democracy, to provide the wherewithal for Britain and its allies to withstand the German blitzkrieg and the German assault that had already swept all across Europe. And he said, it's our task to create or turn ourselves into the arsenal of democracy. And then he said, and this is important, he said, but that doesn't mean we give up what we accomplished in the New Deal. Okay, the empowerment of labor, the creation of the Social Security Act, the creation of the Fair Housing Act, the setting of minimum wages, the provision of a monthly income for single parent households that they had in their mind, women, single mothers who were raising children. I mean, it was a dynamic social democratic moment, the 1930s. And in 1941, he said, though we must become the arsenal of democracy, we should not give up what we have accomplished. In fact, he even said, the basic things expected by our people of their political and economic system are simple. Equality of opportunity for youth and others, jobs for those who can work, security for those who need it, the ending of special privilege for the few, the preservation of civil liberties for all. Now, let me be clear. He made terrible mistakes as president along the way, okay, such as the internment of the Japanese Americans.
Yes.
But it is the case that when he spoke, what he then went on to say was intended for all Americans, and all Americans heard him over radio say this: in the future days which we seek to make secure, we look forward to a world founded upon four essential human freedoms. The first is freedom of speech and expression. The second is freedom of every person to worship God in his own way. The third is freedom from want. The fourth is freedom from fear. And that became the ideal for which the United States entered World War II. Again, the tragedies we know about. Mm-hmm. Now, 3 years later in 1944, with some confidence that Americans and their allies were going to win the war, he gave he gave a State of the Union message every year, but he gave a second really historic State of the Union address, January 11th, 1944. In this speech, he talked about the imperative of pursuing the war effort to conclusion. He talked about the imperative of continued sacrifice. But then he said, we have reached a point in our history that where we understand that needy men and women are not free. Mm-hmm. And the time has come for us to create a second Bill of Rights, an economic Bill of Rights. And here's what he offered as part of that Bill of Rights: the right to a useful job in industries or shops or farms or mines, the right to earn enough to provide adequate food and clothing and recreation. How's that? The right of every farmer to raise and sell his products at a return which will give him his family a decent living. He goes on to talk about the right of every family to a decent home, the right to adequate medical care and the opportunity to achieve and enjoy good health, the right to adequate protection from the economic fears of old age, sickness, accident, and employment. Last but not least, the right to a good education.
Hear, hear.
And I want you to know that this didn't come out of his own imagination. He had commissioned surveys in 1943 asking Americans what they wanted after the war. Mm-hmm. For example,
you mean the leader of the free world actually went to we the people?
Yes.
Incredible.
And 85% of Americans, and that includes 75% of Republicans and 5% of Democrats, wanted national health care.
Imagine
guaranteed
that.
National health care. In every one of the questions asked, Americans across the board in great majority wanted the right to an education. They wanted the right to a decent home. They wanted all of the things that he had laid out, that he would lay out in his State of the Union message of 1944. And he ran again in 1944 for president on that idea as his platform. And I will also tell you that the labor movement, the FLN-CIO, they rallied along with the the NAACP, along with the National Farmers Union. Americans wanted those economic rights. They were convinced they could do it because of what they had accomplished, first of all, in the New Deal, and second of all, in the war effort to defeat fascism. Now, after the war, well, Roosevelt had died a month before the end of the war in Europe, but after the war, Americans continued to want those very things. However, Republicans and Southern Democrats opposed it. Why Republicans? Because they knew that business did not want those things. Why did the Southern Democrats oppose it? Despite the fact they probably needed them more than anyone, because they did not want to integrate their hospitals. Mm. So racism and capitalism got in the way of Americans securing what the overwhelming majority wanted.
And isn't that always the case? Harvey Kay, professor emeritus of democracy and justice studies at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, our co-host for today. We will be back with one last segment where we encourage you, tell us something good. Now, I see two callers on our list. We will get to you, and you will absolutely be able to share what's on your mind. However, first, you're going to have to tell us something good here on the Dom Salvia Show with myself, Jess P.S., guest hosting for the day. We'll be right back. Honey, you really check me. You know the way you look so bad. I'd love to stick around, but I'm running behind. Oh, no. You know I don't even know what I'm hoping to find. Love in the eye. Running into the sun, but I'm running behind.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matinee on Air.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people.
We reported last year that the Trump transition team had been funding itself through unknown private donations and refused to sign a General Services Administration transition support memo, which limited private donations to $5,000. The memo was never signed, and the transition's private donors still haven't been disclosed. Nonprofit news site Notice reports that previous transition teams disclosed that information by February 19th, including Trump's first transition. In November, Trump's chief of staff promised to disclose those donors. The Presidential Transition Act of 1963 allows money controlled by the GSA to fund presidential transition expenses, including office space, personnel, IT, and other support services to aid incoming and outgoing administrations. That funding is contingent on the incoming administration signing a memo of understanding and the $5,000 limit on private donations. But while Trump's team agreed on the terms of the new administration's move into the White House, it refused to sign GSA's transition support memo, allowing it to sidestep the limits and disclosure requirements. So between November 7th and January 20th, it's likely millions were received from wealthy donors and corporations, and Americans still don't know who funded its transfer of power and the influence it bought. We've linked the Notice report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Todd Alba Show.
Think about how many people in our communities, our friends, our families, our neighbors, our postal workers, carriers, people that work at our Veterans Affairs hospitals, USDA. Here's what Marjorie Taylor Greene, Donald Trump's lieutenant, thinks of all the people I just mentioned.
Federal employees do not deserve their jobs.
That's what Donald Trump and MAGA believe if you are a federal worker.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show for one final segment without Dom Salvia, but he will be back tomorrow. For today, I'm Jess P.S., producer of this fine program, joined by Harvey J.K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, here in our final segment of the day, where we invite you all to tell us something good. We're going to start with a text that we got in. Megan from Sun Prairie says, something good. My grandma beat colorectal cancer. Confirmed 100% cancer-free as of today. Enormous congratulations to you and your entire family, and most especially your grandmother, Megan. That is absolutely fantastic news. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you, indeed. That's wonderful.
That's incredible. We're going to get to the phone lines, where if you've been on hold and you have something to share with us about the daily news or about anything that we've been talking about today, you may absolutely tell us that. But first, you got to tell us something good. We're going to start with Ollie from the North Woods. What is that, my friend?
Well, my something good is that yesterday I reached out to Governor Evers' office, left a message for him, and also one for his secretary.
Very good.
And today I received a phone call back from his office from a very nice young lady who read back my concerns to me, which showed that they were paying attention. She asked for contact information so that they could get back to me with further inquiries.
That is fantastic, Ollie.
It just goes to show that there are people out there, there are government people out there who do care and who are willing to listen to their constituents. And it truly gave me hope.
Me too, Ollie. Thank you for that call, and thank you for sharing something good. Civic engagement, always good, and something that here at the Civic Media Radio Network, we try to promote as often as we can. So yes, when you have concerns, when you have things that you want to see in your government, you are the government. We the people run this ship. give them a call, send them messages, talk to your elected officials, and have your voice heard. Ellie Tom, you are next. Tell something good.
Just first off, we, as you said, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. Something good. I don't know if Harvey will agree with me on this one or not, but I am a proud FDR Democrat and will continue to be. And I actually, something good is I watched The Roosevelt on Amazon this weekend. I learned a lot. And I would.
Is that a movie, TV show? What is it?
It's actually a documentary. It's by Ken Burns on FDR and Theodore Roosevelt. It's on Amazon.
And Eleanor Roosevelt. Don't leave her out.
Very important.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely Eleanor Roosevelt. Absolutely. Thank you for that, Harvey. But everyone should watch. It's about 7 episodes, about 2 hours each episode. But it will give you a real idea of, where it is that we should be going and who it is that we should be led by. Mm-hmm. Which is FDR. And Harvey, one quick question for you. Do you think J.B. Pritzker could possibly be our next FDR? Maybe it takes a billionaire to beat a billionaire. And also maybe he'll actually move in a progressive direction. What do you think?
Well, I am impressed by Pritzker. I have to say, I really am. I mean, there are a few governors, as we realized a year ago, that would be good. Bashir down in Kentucky would be good. But I think Pritzker is the most interesting one right now. Former students of mine who are down in Illinois studying, they're very impressed. They think he's very pro-labor, very progressive. So I won't predict his future in politics. It could be presidency, who knows? But I definitely think you're onto something with Pritzker, yes.
All right, very good. Thank you for the call, Ellie Tom. As always, we appreciate you, one of our loudest and proudest FDR Democrats. Final call on our list, Jack from the Mac. Tell us something good.
Well, this is quite a bit lighter, but I'm associated with both the Madison Jazz Society and also Jazz Unlimited in Milwaukee. And the Madison Jazz Society has got a monthly jam that they hold at Cafe Cota. It's run, the jam itself is run as a house band, usually with three young jazz musicians. And every time I've been to one of these, which is almost all of them, the musicians have just been incredible. We also have a monthly workshop that's at a place called Copa out in Fitchburg. And that is an educational opportunity, and then a jam follows it. It's run by professional jazz musicians from the Madison area. Jazz and that kind of music, both the more modern and the standard, it's alive and well in Wisconsin.
And that is something very, very good. Jack from the Mac, thank you so much for that call. Quickly, before we run out of time, Harvey K., tell me something good.
Well, my understanding is that people are starting to waken up to the fact that Trump and Musk and the Republicans are not good for America. The question is, will the Democrats wake up to the fact that they should become a political party again in the FDR tradition?
There we go. I will say that is absolutely something good. The 50-51 movement, I will put information on them in the show notes. Check them out. There were protests around the country today, including in Wisconsin. That is absolutely something good. This has been the Dom Salvia Show, co-hosted today by Jess P.S. and Harvey J.K. Tune in tomorrow when Dom will be back in the seat. Now stay tuned for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. And if you want to catch the not State of the Union, it will be on Civic Media. Have a great night. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
Join me as we find out what happened to USAID with Christina Dry, speechwriter and communications analyst for the agency.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trump and Vance verbally assaulted the president of Ukraine, an ally of the U.S. Trump defending the president of Russia, a known dictator. This is a complete capitulation to our sworn enemies. And it's time for Republicans, my former party that I left in 2011, to speak the hell up. Because if we don't, it's not going to be long before we don't have anything left to defend.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. In just a few hours, President Trump addresses a joint session of Congress and the nation, outlining his agenda on the economy, security, and trade. It comes as the U.S. imposed tariffs on China, Canada, and Mexico imports today. That triggered reciprocal tariffs on U.S. goods. Democratic senators gathered at the Capitol with constituents voicing concern. Gary Wordish is a lifelong farmer and president of Minnesota's Farmers Union.
President Trump, when in his first term, he had the tariff war that he started back then in 2018. In that time, it hit primarily against China, which is a large soybean buyer of the United States. We have not recovered from that, and we never will.
GOP Senate Leader John Thune thinks he sees tariffs through a different lens than the president. The Vatican says Pope Francis, who is battling pneumonia, will sleep with a ventilator mask following yesterday's respiratory episodes. And severe storms on the march across Gulf states, including Louisiana, where Mardi Gras celebrations are underway. This is ABC News.
I'm James.